Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for this morning is United States against Ramirez-Ortega.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Robert O'Reilly, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Alberto Ramirez-Ortega. I'm here basically on an assumption, and the assumption is that the charging decision by the immigration of when to charge someone with legal reentry should not be a major determinant factor in how much time an individual gets. In this particular case,
I can't understand quite how we could rule that way without significantly undermining the core separation of powers principle that charging is the responsibility of the executive branch.
Your Honor, this Court has already ruled on this particular issue in the Villegas-Miranda case from 2009, a case which is virtually identical to this case. It was the exact same argument, and this Court ruled in favor of the appellant. The fact of the matter is we're not talking about when the sentence has to be brought in. We're taking into account what the sentence should be. And it's a simple comparison. If you had an individual who was found in July of 2009 and prosecuted soon after, he'd at least have the opportunity to serve the two sentences concurrently for the 3.5 years between the time that Mr. Ortega was.
So if you read what Judge Koukouras had to say, I don't think there is one whit of any mitigating thing that this guy could have argued. There's nothing.
Well, Your Honor, but
he is, as Judge Koukouras observed, so bad that he has no possible way of having any mitigation.
I understand what you're saying, but Your Honor, I think that the fact that we want to take into account is not only did Judge Koukouras sentence him to the top of the sentencing guideline range, but because Judge Koukouras never even addressed whether the sentence was going to be concurrent, partially concurrent.
Didn't Judge Koukouras have the chance to make the sentence concurrent to the remainder of his state sentence that he had yet to serve?
He certainly did. It was about 6 months. Judge Koukouras never mentioned
anything. And he didn't do it, did he?
He didn't mention anything about concurrent.
So he declined to make it concurrent to the remainder of the sentence.
No, I don't think that's a fair characterization. I think the fact of the matter is he didn't address the subject at all. There's no statement in the judgment about whether it's concurrent, partially concurrent, or consecutive. There's
and
no statement.
Where did counsel ask him to make it concurrent to the last 6 months?
I believe that he when he was making his argument, he said that it should be taken into account.
But did he specifically say, under the guidelines, I'd like you to make this concurrent to the last 6 months?
I don't recall a specific section in the sentencing transcript where he says
I don't either, which is why it strikes me that that would affect our standard of review.
Well, I do think in every case the judge should consider it, and certainly there was a discussion on the record about the time that was remaining.
Of course, the guidelines address concurrent, consecutive, or mixed. And normally, if counsel doesn't ask the judge to do something, then we're looking at plain error review.
Well, again, my argument is not principally on that issue. My principal issue is on the 3 years before that the judge did not take into account. Now, you've got a situation where not only did he sentence him to the top of the sentencing guideline ranges, something they said is very rare, but when you take into account that factor, as well as the 3-year delay in charging him, it was nearly 3 years, between the time that he was found and the time that he was charged, you're talking about a dramatic upward departure far beyond the sentencing guideline range compared to someone who would have been charged within a reasonable time after being found.
Well, about that delay, as you describe it, what do we know about what the government knew about this defendant 3 years previously? In other words, there's some information about there was an encounter. But
the pre-sentence report found him on July 27th, 3 days after he had been arrested for an armed robbery and was in custody and has been in custody since July 24, 2009, right up to the present. So we know, and that was in the pre-sentence report, and both parties stipulated to his accuracy. So there's no dispute that the immigration officials had found him illegally in the country at the end of July 2009. He wasn't charged.
Did the immigration officials have all the information about the prior removal and so forth?
Right, exactly. He had been previously deported. They knew who he was. They had his identity.
That's in the pre-sentence report.
They put in there, they said that they found him and identified him through those records 3 days after he'd been arrested. So there doesn't seem to be any and certainly none was argued. There wasn't any procedural bar to him being charged with illegal reentry at that time.
There's no procedural bar, but the government has a lot of factors that it takes into account in when to charge, including who else the person may be with. I mean, I just don't see the reason on the record. And just to say that a judge could know something doesn't mean that the judge does know. I don't see anywhere in this record why the government waited 3 years.
Well, and I don't know why the government waited 3 years. I don't think there's anything on the record about why the government. But I do think
Why does it not matter why the government waited?
Well, and again, I think it's something where when a district court is charged with finding an appropriate sentence for an individual, he should take into account the total time that he's serving. That's the whole reason that the judges are committed the discretion for concurrent, partially concurrent.
Judge Kukuris heard your argument, right?
Pardon me?
Judge Kukuris heard the argument about the concurrent sentences.
He made a comment on it, so I'm sure he heard it. He just never referenced it. It just when he made his decision.
Well, my point is, to get back to what I said initially, he heard it. You cannot read his remarks that he made at sentencing as anything but this guy being the worst person he's seen. And there's no possible way on earth if you sent this back. He goes, oh, my God, I should have done it concurrently, right?
But I disagree, Your Honor. I definitely think that if he wanted to reach a sentence that was at the top of the guideline range, but not so dramatically over, that I think he would go back. And I also think that as a cost-benefit analysis, we should send it back simply because it's so much less expensive than incarcerating him for an extra 3 years when Judge Kukuris could say yes. On the basis of his criminal history, I wanted to put him at the top of the guideline range. But I didn't.
Judge Kukuris says, I have to take into account how he spent his time after he returned, mm-hmm. Subsequent to the removal, and he spent it robbing people. It seems to be Judge Kukuris' view of whether this guy would be entitled to a benefit.
And there's no question that Judge Kukuris could decide to do it upward, what is effectively a dramatic upward departure, to not only go to the top of the guideline range, but to go beyond it.
How is that an upward departure?
It's
not required that the sentence be concurrent. It can be concurrent. So how does that make it an upward departure?
Well, again, I'm basing this based on some. I'm simply trying to compare two individuals. One who was charged.
It's not really an upward departure. It's just a longer sentence.
If he had been charged in 2009 with illegal reentry, the only way he gets the time that he's actually serving now would be through an upward departure. That's the argument.
Okay.
It's a luck of the draw. I mean, we don't have any control. The federal courts and the U.S. attorney has no control over the state charges and how they operate, or they don't have any direct control.
And I agree with that, Your Honor, but I do think that Judge Kukuris has the discretion to choose a sentence.
Listen to this last line. So I think probably for the first time I'm going to go to at the very high end of the guidelines as the government requests, because in this case, I think unlike any other case of this kind I've heard before, it is warranted. And this is a judge who's been on the bench for 30 years.
And there's no question about that, Your Honor. But I also think that it's a situation where I don't think that, having never gone that high, that he would treat Mr. Ramirez and give him a sentence which not only is at the top of the guideline range, but does not take into account that he's already served 3.5 years before he got to sentencing that he could not serve concurrently. I'll save the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, John Podlyska for the United States. The defendant asks in his reply brief that this be remanded so that the judge can explain why he imposed the sentence that he did, why he didn't give him credit for the time that he would serve. He had already served in state custody and the time that he was going to be serving after the sentencing hearing.
Does the record reflect anything about why the three-year delay from the time the government found out Mr. Ramirez was back in the country to the time of charging occurred?
It does not.
So, I mean, I can understand if it's a cocaine conspiracy or something. Very often there are good reasons to wait because you're in the middle of an investigation. There are other people to find. But a 1326A, I mean, once you're in, you're in. And I don't know what else there is to it. So it seems odd that there would be a three-year delay.
And in that 3 years, there are two components. One is the amount of time that is with the agency, and then the time from when the agency presents it to the U.S. Attorney's Office and the case is indicted.
So we don't know if the immigration authorities just didn't tell DOJ about it, or what are you saying?
Well, it's not in the record as to how what the proportions were.
That's the problem, in a way. It's not in the record.
That was not a point that the defendant really was making. In fact, he took pains to say he wasn't alleging that there was any impropriety about it.
Do we know when the agency brought it to the U.S. Attorney's attention?
We do. It's not part of the record. The argument from the defense was simply that it was a fact that he'd been in custody for those 3 years and asked the court to take that into consideration. The defense did not argue that the judge ought to take into consideration the fact that the sentence wasn't over yet, but the court was advised that the release date from state custody was anticipated to be July of 2013. All of those facts were before the court.
And I'm correct that nobody directly addressed the guideline provision about discretion to make things concurrent versus consecutive.
It was not discussed. It was addressed by the defense in terms of imposing a sentence below the guideline range to reflect the fact that the man had already been in custody for 3 years and
so
was continuing to serve.
That kind of an adjustment, which sometimes happens, that's within the judge's discretion.
It clearly was, and that was before the court, and it was part not only of the presentation at sentencing, but of the sentencing memoranda that were filed by the defense. It was in the underlying facts were set out in the PSR. All of that was before Judge Koukouras, and the defense is asking that it be remanded so that he can explain why he didn't reflect that in his sentence.
Well, so what I'm going to suggest is that this is a topic that comes before this court a lot, you know, namely, how much of an explanation does the district court have to give in order for us to be able meaningfully to conduct appellate review? We can see what's in the PSR. We assume that district judges do what they're supposed to do and read the PSR. But how much one should infer from silence is a tricky question.
Here, though, when the judge went to the high end of the guidelines, he really did, and he specifically addressed the fact that there was no amount of mitigation here that was going to affect him. It had in the past. He'd had other cases where that was a factor that he was taking into consideration. He couldn't do it here. And then he went into the details of why he was, for the first time in this kind of an offense, going to the high end of the guidelines. And all of that detail as to why he was doing it, all of that would answer the question of why didn't he make some adjustment for the sentence that had already been served. And the key to it was, he said, there's no guarantee from this record, because this man had committed new crimes after he had been removed and came back into the country, there was no guarantee that wasn't going to happen again, and that he had an obligation to protect the community. He was going to the high end for fear that this man, once he served his sentence and was removed, was going to come back into the community and threaten the community again, and so he went to the high end to prevent that from happening for as long as he possibly could. That's as clear an answer as to why there was no adjustment for mitigating circumstances as he could possibly state. There would be no purpose to send it back to him to address this again. He has already said that. Anybody listening to that argument could not be confused as to why he wasn't making any adjustments for any of the four mitigation arguments that the defense was making. And therefore, we'd ask that the sentence be affirmed as is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. O'Reilly?
Just very briefly, Your Honor.
I think that's necessarily the case, actually.
Thank you. I just want to make a quick point. I understand the government's view of it. I read the same transcript. I didn't feel that I had enough to even challenge the reasonableness of the sentence simply because I felt like it was incomplete on this particular issue. I don't think that there was ever a cogent acknowledgement made by the district court in this case as to that argument with respect to the timing of the sentencing. And it's very difficult to explain to my client, well, if they prosecuted you sooner, you'd be out in 3 years sooner. But because they delayed, they just tacked on the time.
Could have.
Right. Could have. But again, it's very unclear to me that Judge Koukouras would sentence him beyond the statutory maximum if the government had brought the sentence within a reasonable time period. I think that this case is extremely similar to the Villegas versus Brandix decision from 2009. I think it's entirely on four squares with that, right down to the amount of time, the sentence, everything. In this court, the court remanded it.
How about the language of the sentencing judge?
Pardon me?
How about the language of the sentencing judge?
In that case, just like in this case, he sentenced him to the 96 months and said that he had an extensive criminal history. This court said that they did not address the issue about the timing of bringing the charges and remanded the case. And I think that that case controls in this case, that this court should follow that case. My time is far. Thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. And thank you very much, Mr. Riley. You were appointed, were you not?